Okay. Hey, Elise,
Yes, Mother.
I'm gonna try putting my hearing aids back in, but if it starts to squeal,
Okay.
we do this a lot. One moment, please.
Everybody, and welcome to You're on Mute. I'm Pastor Elise here with.
Pastor Mary, so glad to be here with you.
Yeah, hey everybody, it's so great. We are so flippin' excited for the
Very
episode
excited.
that we have today. I know a lot of you have heard me talk about the program that I participated in through Princeton Theological Seminary called Iron Sharpens Iron. We have today, with us, the one and only Thais Carter and the one and only Ann Stewart, who are the co-directors of this program. We are going to sit down with them and talk about ISI, talk about women in leadership, talk about seminary education. It's a phenomenal interview. And then after Anne and Thais sign off, Mom and I have a little debrief conversation, which we'll include you in as well. So we are so excited to bring you these two phenomenal women today. Enjoy our conversation with Thais and Anne.
You're gonna love it.
Woo! Well, we would love to welcome two incredible guests today to You're on Mute. These are two women that are near and dear to me, both personally and professionally. We have Thais Carter and Ann Stewart from the Iron Sharpening Iron Women in Executive Leadership Program from Princeton Theological Seminary. That's right, y'all. We went Ivy League for this episode. So we are very excited to have them on. I recently just finished up said program at Princeton, and it is literally a life-changing, ministry-altering experience. And so I am so excited to have them both to tell us about themselves and their journeys, but also a little more about ISI. And for all of you women in ministry who are listening, if you don't at least look at the website, you are not doing it right. And hopefully, you might even apply as well to the program. We're hoping that definitely comes out of this conversation. So,
I looked at the
welcome.
website and I want to apply.
Yeah, you
Yes.
totally should,
You're
Mom.
welcome.
I've encouraged her to potentially apply, and she says, "I'm too old. I'm too old for that." But then I'm like, "Differently wise, Mary. Differently
I know.
wise. You can
I
do
could learn
it."
so much.
You could learn so much. It's pretty incredible. But so welcome, Thais and Anne. We're so excited to have you on with us. I don't know if you guys played rock, paper, scissors beforehand of who would introduce themselves first, but I'll just do Brady Bunch style on my screen. Thais is right next to me. So Thais, would you introduce yourself, please?
Absolutely. And thank you so much for having us on the podcast today. It is such a joy to kind of see you in this context as well. And just such a gift to be able to have this time. So I am Thais Carter. I am the Director of Strategic Initiatives at Princeton Theological Seminary and the Associate Director for Iron Sharpening Iron. And prior to this, I served as the Executive Director of the Institute for Leadership and Service at Valparaiso University. And prior to that, I had a decades career in publishing and in marketing. And it has been such a gift to, now when I talk about vocation, I say, I think all along it was storytelling. And so one of my, I think, real joys is that the stories I get to tell now have to do with the exceptional women who come through Iron Sharpening Iron, and I think helping them tell different kinds of narratives about their leadership and how they not just belong, but are really helping shape the future of the church. And so I feel like the storytelling has taken a slightly different turn, but it all feels very connected to me. And one of the other things that really kind of informs my work with ISI and with the seminary is I was so fortunate to go and get my master's of public administration at NYU's Wagner School of Public Service. And so really focusing on kind of how organizations work and how we think about what it means to live and lead in community was such a beautiful part of my time there. And I feel like at every moment I'm trying to infuse what we're doing at ISI with some of the things that I found so meaningful there. So even though in a lot of ways, what do, you know, journalism and publishing and marketing and organizational management have to do with equipping women in ministry, I would say all the things.
All the things.
Everything has to do with all of it.
Yeah.
But it is a joy to get to do that work with women like you and with women like Anne. So Anne, you should introduce yourself.
Oh, thanks so much. It is such such a delight to be here. I've been hearing about You're on Mute for such a long time since you first came to PTS, Elise. So thrilled to be on the show today. So I'm Anne Stewart. I am the program director for Iron Sharpening Iron and also serve here at Princeton Seminary as executive vice president. So in that capacity, work really closely with our president and board of trustees and executive team here on the larger strategic directions of the seminary, oversee our operations and facilities, admissions and financial aid, IT, a variety of different functions. So I have a really broad-based role, which has been really exciting. Not at all what I thought I would be doing many years ago. But in many ways, it sort of all led me to Iron Sharpening Iron. So I did my undergraduate at Smith College in Massachusetts, so a women's college, and had a really formative experience there of women's education and understood what it meant to be part of this really high octane environment where you have high-performing, high-achieving women in one setting, and that's part of what we see in Iron Sharpening Iron. I did my MDiv here at Princeton Seminary, and then went on to do a PhD in Old Testament at Emory University, and worked a lot on biblical poetry and on wisdom literature, which is part of where the name Iron Sharpening Iron comes from the book of Proverbs. And so, in many respects, the germ of the idea for Iron Sharpening Iron came from all of these different things.
I know, that's so fascinating. I remember like freaking out when you were talking about how you wrote your thesis on Proverbs. It's like not many women theologians are like, you know what I'm going to focus on? I'm going to tackle Proverbs. I mean, it was like mind blowing when I was just like, oh my gosh. And it's so fun. I was looking, I mean, I know a lot about you both, but I was kind of trying to do a little homework yesterday and reading your bios on the website. Both of you have such long titles. I mean, it's like, I feel like the longer the title of your job, the more you have to do. But it was incredible. And I was like, oh my gosh, I've got to get Anne's book. Like, why have we not gotten Anne's book yet? So it is fascinating. And especially when you think of women in leadership and the kind of weaponization of the Proverbs 31 woman as well, that we hear a lot about too. It's such a cool, cool dynamic to kind of break that down. But I would love it too, if y'all would just explain kind of a basic, what is ISI? What are we talking about today?
Oh, Iron Sharpening Iron is so many things. I think so many things. I think first and foremost, and you know, I think Anne is the best person to talk about kind of how Iron Sharpening Iron first kind of came into being. But what it was, if you would have asked 5 years ago, is Iron Sharpening Iron was one thing. And it was this executive leadership program specifically for women clergy. Originally, it was a 2-year program. Now it's a 12-month program, trying to make it accessible to more women who have very busy schedules and situations. But originally, that was it. And it was specifically for ordained women working in congregational settings. And today, one of the things that's really beautiful is that Iron Sharpening Iron is still that. And I think the executive leadership program, that executive leadership certificate, will continue to be kind of the foundation of what we do. And all of these other pieces kind of spring from what we learn from that. But now it's also this 10-week leadership development seminar. It is all of these additional kind of resourcing, you know, 2-day intensives, online workshops, which speak to, I think the real beautiful thing is today, Iron Sharpening Iron is really a network of passionate, gifted, skilled women who understand the role of faith in their leadership and who want to make an impact on the communities that they are a part of. And I think that that is, you know, the biggest gift that we give all of you. And I think, you know, at least you've heard me say this a ton. I think, you know, we will resource you as much as we possibly can, but the biggest gift we give you all is each other. That is when you all are together, there is nothing you can't do. And I think that has been the really cool part, is what started as a program to resource you has really leaned into kind of the beauty of the cohort and the coaching, and that all of those skills are amplified by your ability to learn together and then apply them together and talk about what that looks like. So Iron Sharpening Iron is today, it's a network. We have our kind of core educational pieces, but it's a network of some pretty incredible women.
Absolutely. And I'm so excited. I have a big ISI week because we're doing this today. And then my cohort is doing a Zoom reunion on Thursday. So,
of course they are.
Yeah. So we're, we all got to get our bracelets on and get our Zoom on, but it'll be really,
oh yeah. The bracelets. I heard about that.
Yes. My arts and crafts and friendship bracelet, love came through on that one. But so, Anne, will you tell us a little bit about kind of like, because you know, you are the creator, right? Like you, like this was a seed of an idea that came from you. So what kind of sparked this in you, and what made you think like, we need this?
Yeah, it's been a really wonderful journey. More than 5 years ago that this started and has grown into what it is today. It started with the seed of an idea. We had an opportunity with a gift from the Lilly Endowment to put together a cohort program for pastoral leaders. And so I was charged with doing the research to think about how Princeton Seminary might go about that. And at the beginning, I had thought that women might be one group of the cohorts that we would serve. But getting into the research, I very quickly discovered that there was such a huge unmet need. So many different professions have ways of thinking about the advancement of women in the profession and thinking about how to resource gifted women leaders. And as I was looking around the church landscape for similar programs, I just couldn't find any that existed. Or the programs that I did find that were directed towards women were often support group type programs, which are really important and have their place. But are not always about resourcing high capacity leaders with the tools of leadership. So in the early days of research on this program, I started did a focus group of some really terrific women pastors, and started with what I thought would be an icebreaker question for these women, which was, tell me the first time you saw yourself as a leader. And there were crickets in this room.
Wow.
No one said a word, so I'm just going to wait it out. And eventually somebody said, well, I don't know, maybe there was a time that, and gave a brief example. But it was so striking to me that this group of really exceptional women who were leading thriving congregations couldn't articulate a vision of themselves as leaders and didn't necessarily have an innate or a ready leadership identity that they were kind of consciously living out of. And so that really became the seed of the idea for how we might put a program together that's aim is about developing agency and sense of leadership identity. We talk all the time about the fact that there is no one right way to lead. There's no one way of women leading. There are as many different ways to lead as there are gifted and capable people who are leading. Our program is not about tricks and tools for leadership. It is really about how to bring people together in the network that Taif described. To grow a sense of one's own agency, competency, and confidence in the gifts and skills of leadership.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was kind of the concept at the beginning, and very quickly put together a team of people that is still the core of Iron Sharpening Iron leadership today. So it got connected to Lori Ferguson, who's an outstanding executive coach and is our coaching coordinator, and she connected us with Lois Anik and Shelley Smith, who are our fantastic coaching team. We also got connected to our pastors and residents, who are just amazingly gifted, wise women leaders who have also helped to shape this program. So Sarah Butter and Kathy Gilliard, who serve as pastors and residents for Park Board Executive Program and Pam Giselle, who's the pastor in residence for our virtual programs. And then very quickly, Thais came on board as well. And so just the really remarkable thing for me about this program has been that it has been an experience of iron sharpening iron, even in its own creation and evolution and some of us that have been part of leading and shaping it, like sharpen each other's iron all the time. Such a great gift.
Yeah, it really is. It's a super team for sure. And it's so incredible just to see as a participant watching how each of you lead differently and the different gifts that the different components have. And I mean, that's something that I've been so impressed with is kind of the style of the program. You know, I mean, and I've talked about it actually on previous episodes. Every now and then my mom and I will say like, okay, what continuing ed have we done this summer? And we'll kind of talk about what we've learned or something like that. And I'm the first one to say, and I've said it publicly many times, I hate continuing ed. I find it really pointless 99% of the time. Usually when I go to events that are thrown together by the church, I get a lot out of like the worship, and I get a lot out of the connections I can make with other pastors and leaders, but very rarely do the like workshops ever feel useful. It's always like how to bring youth into the church. And it's just like, my God, we've been debating this for 50 years.
Well, and you also wonder, like, you know, I mean, the only people that ever ask, at least in the Lutheran church, the only people that ever ask you about your continuing ed, never your congregation for the most part.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have to put it down on the form to the bishop every year. And you're like, I wonder what they want to hear.
Right. Yeah.
I should ask that sometime. You know, what are you looking for?
Right.
You know? Well, I think part of what you're responding to, Elise, is that fundamentally so much continuing education is built around the problems. Like the problem is we need more young people in the church. The problem is we need to be thinking about how we're communicating. And I think the gift of iron sharpening iron is that, like, we're not going to tell you what your problem is. Like, we're going to tell you that we believe you are equipped to help conceive of the solution. Mm-hmm. And we want to equip you to be a problem solver or a better identifier of what the problems and opportunities are in your context. And so instead of feeling like, well, haven't we been talking about this for like the last 15 years since forever, it's actually a way of thinking about like you as like a valuable resource, as opposed to like, how do we just keep naming new problems? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, whether it's thinking about change management or strategic planning or design thinking or any of these things, part of the gift is that you can apply that in any situation you're facing. And so it feels more relevant, but it's not because of anything like we do. It's because you get to choose where you use it. And so it's fundamentally designed to be the kind of continuing education that like gives you agency in thinking about its application. Mm-hmm. It doesn't treat you as a learner. It treats you as a participant. And I think that is like such a core distinctive of how iron sharpening iron functions. Mm-hmm. Which is part of why I think it's been so like sticky for the people who have come through it.
Oh, big time. I mean, knowing from the beginning, you know, you all made it very clear, like, we're not going to bring in a ministry financial expert. We're going to bring in financial experts because you are the ministry experts. So like, we're going to give you A and you're going to go home to B, and like, your job is to build that bridge. And I feel like, you know, that's a huge part of being able to walk away with the knowledge, because when you have a Rutgers professor teaching you about P&L sheets and how to like, you know, function and deal with your budget. And she was so precious. She threw in so many like, well, at my synagogue, this is what we did. And I remember in the room, we were kind of like, it's okay. You don't have to prove your religiousness to us. We really just want to know about the numbers, I promise you. But it was so
But
cool.
See, in my generation, they would have complained about that because they would have said, well, yeah, this person was a really hotshot banker telling us about this, but he doesn't know anything about church stuff, you know. And as we would have gone away saying, yeah, it just wasn't applicable.
Well,
You
we
know,
certainly, and
and I
my
that's
cohort
really
especially was a group of some sassy people. We would call out, presenters every now and then, like, no, that doesn't actually work.
not where that way.
My favorite moment was from this past intensive, my last one in May, where we were talking about change management. And someone goes, I mean, there's like big changes that like make a lot of people upset. And then there's little changes, right? Like changing the time of something by 15 minutes. Nobody cares about that. And half of us were like, beg to
Oh, yeah,
differ,
they do.
beg to differ. So there are those moments of like, well, but then again, that network and that ability to then, process the information with our cohort. We can then tease out, okay, what did you get out of today? And like, what made your ears perk up and this and that? And
But
so
the difference is you could just laugh about that as the 15 minutes instead of saying, oh, obviously this person has nothing to teach us. You know, I mean, that's, you know, the difference. Which I was wondering, could you all just say a little bit more about the image of iron sharpening iron and maybe where it came from and what you think that means?
Yeah, so
Are we referring to the little punch image? Is that what we're talking about?
yeah. Are you talking about like
Yeah, I
this?
mean, yeah.
Yeah. We cuz there's two images. There's iron sharpening iron, and then the logo of the program is Mary punching the devil in the face. So
Is that what that is?
I want to hear the story behind both of them.
I'm talking about Proverbs because I'm the
Okay.
Proverb. That's
Proverbs
my
expert. Take it
tongue
away.
for the logo.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the name comes from Proverbs 27:17, which is as iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. And so that's really trying to capture this idea that we need one another, right? And we need one another to be sharp. And so that is so much about how we think about the construction of the program, that it's not only the curriculum that we think really intentionally about how that curriculum's structured and who teaches that curriculum. But it's the people that we bring together around that curriculum, especially in the cohort, that is where the heart of the real learning takes place. And I think that's the difference between the people that participate in iron sharpening iron come to opt in, they come to show up. And so they don't check out with a, well, that isn't relevant to me, because we're always challenging participants to say, like, you're the expert in the room on the church. And so you are at the leadership table with other leaders from a variety of different disciplines, and your voice is necessary. And that's sort of how we get to that leadership identity piece that I was talking about. I just say, the other edge to that name for me is that it's really important to me that programs run by women, about women, for women, have metaphors that are about strength and wisdom and power. It's not pink, it's not fluffy. It's these are images of strength, because that's what we see in the participants.
Yeah, you're preaching Mary's language on that one for sure.
I know, absolutely.
Yeah. So
Well, I mean,
Mary punching the devil, where did that come in?
yeah, tell us about
So
that.
okay, so So the original background is, one of the things that's really important to us in a program by women for women is that we try as much as possible to support women vendors in everything we do. So whether that's food, that's photography, that's design. And so we were very fortunate that there was a student at Princeton Theological Seminary, Morgan Prophet Davis. She actually graduated with her MDiv this spring. And Morgan's side hustle is she has this beautiful lino cut business, Mo Makes Prints. And so we knew that we wanted to partner with her to create a design for iron sharpening iron to go on bags, water bottles, et cetera, et cetera. And when we were going kind of back and forth around possible images, there was one that she had already been working up, which is the one that we ended up licensing, which is based on a 13th century painting of Mary punching the devil in the face, which, I think that it is both, I think, kind of rooted in, there is like an ancient art that exists that, but Morgan didn't just come up with it. We didn't just come up with it. But I think, to the point around like images of strength, I do think that there is something that kind of speaks to, like, we are, I think it's kind of working against some like damsel in distress stuff that I think is actually like deeply important and deeply resonant. It's also good to have, you know, we have our formal word mark that says iron sharpening iron that goes on most things. But for the alumna of the program, for people who kind of get what we're going for, that iconography is actually, it's fun. And it speaks to the fact that like, women contain multitudes, and part of it is being able to laugh, and part of it is being able to like stand up and fight when it comes down to it. And so it's meant to be kind of the fun side of what we feel like we're talking about all the time. But Morgan really did such a beautiful job kind of creating a version of that image, which I think has really resonated with people and brings up a lot of questions, which I think is lovely. We had some of our materials out at reunion at the seminary in May, and a bunch of people were asking like, oh, like what's that about?
What's this?
And I think it prompts actually a really great conversation about how we think of women's leadership.
Definitely. I love explaining it to people when they ask me, what is that on your water bottle? And I'm like, oh, that's Mary punching the devil. Let me tell you about that. But yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Well, it's a conversation starter for sure.
Yeah.
Yes. And the thing I love about it, just going back to the Christian tradition, is that women have always been leaders in Christian communities. And so we are carrying on a very long tradition here, which I think is sometimes important to remind people.
Absolutely.
Well, and I totally agree with you on that. I mean, you know, from Mary Magdalene and before on, women have been leaders in the church. But, you know, when I was ordained in 1983, and, you know, I've been the first woman pastor every place I've served. And you somehow get the same questions. I'm like, seriously? I've been in ministry for 42 years and you're still asking me that question? But and so it's just so gratifying to hear, you know, to with this program, to really see the changes that have come about. And I was thinking about how just about every interview I've ever had, like before a call committee, search committee, you always had to be ready for the question. So what gifts do you think you bring to ministry as a woman? Right? And I just thought, you don't ask a guy that question. You never ask that. You're trying to see what I think is different, what you can expect, because they already had some kind of goofy image in their mind anyway. And it's really great to see us moving past that, because you know, I was always the only clergy person in every clergy group, local clergy group. And so you were always kind of the outsider. And then all the local women clergy could do was to try to get together, you know, put some kind of clergy women group together so that we would have some sort of majority. But those meetings almost always ended up being complaining about how hard it was to be a woman in ministry. And it was really difficult to get past that, because there was always somebody who was on the hot seat, right? Somebody had just had some bad experience with something and needed to debrief. And it's like, that's just where we were then, But it's really great to hear about, you know, the networking possibilities, and just saying we're all leaders. We're not trying to prove ourselves. We're trying to work, you know, work for the gospel and, you know, bring our gifts to the mission.
One of the things I liked best is ISI is not, we're going to focus on developing these women because women are inherently weak or worse.
Right.
It's there has not been an opportunity, and look how strong these women have gotten already. Let's, you know, incur like let's continue the growth, not start it. So we're just kind of tagging onto that.
No, but Mary, I wanted to affirm, I think this idea that, like, you know, with women's clergy groups and that everybody's kind of coming, there's always somebody who's had some experience that they need to debrief, that continues. That persists.
I'm sure.
And I think that this is one of the real gifts of the cohort, is there is a place to take that, but there's a place to take that where you also have your coaches. You have people who are able to, you know, not necessarily be like, okay, now get over it and move on, but who are able to help kind of process, where did that come from? How can you move forward? And I think one of the things that has been so interesting, and this happens every year, every cohort, is the number of people who are the first or the only, and they are being held to a standard of usually a guy that has served in that position for 20 to 30 years prior to them coming on board. And yep. one of the real gifts is being able to say, like, you are not crazy. You are not extra. You are not demanding anything that is, you know, out of step or out of place. This is as much about advocating for what you need as it is about educating, whether it's personnel committees, lay leaders, about what leaders, not women leaders, but just leaders need today. You can look at any profession and people aren't staying in a job for 20 years anymore.
No.
There's a lot more turnover. The ways that, you know, every different professional sector is being shaped by all of these kind of competing new forces and trends in our communities in the United States and the world, like that's real for everybody. And so there's an education that happens. And part of what we really want to do is make it less about like, well, these are the ways in which your identity as a woman makes it hard, but more like this is what contemporary modern leaders who are looking at success as not just having a list of 100 things to do and see, look, I did all 100, but being able to say, these are the things that I have to do. And I want to be able to do as many as possible while also like being healthy about it. But if you could check off all 100 things, but at the end of it, you're exhausted, like your mental health is not good, your relationships are strained, then yeah, maybe you got a lot done, but I don't think you were successful. Right. And so a big part of this is giving people the foundation to like advocate for what they need to be successful in a way that's both achieving the things that they feel called to do within their congregations and communities, but doing it in a way that doesn't forgo their humanity. And I think like this is, you know, I think pastors generally and women specifically will tie themselves up in knots trying to be what everybody thinks like they should be. And so part of this program is being able to say, no, you are a human being, not a leadership robot. And actually the best way to be effective as a leader is to like embrace your finitude. And that's not to say that we're not growing, that we're not investing in our professional development, but also realizing that like this desire to somehow like be what you think people need you to be isn't gonna get you where you think. But I think recognizing that so much of that need to debrief is still very much there, but it's about not leaving people in that, in the, you know, in the sharing that like there's the sharing and then there's the like action, and not that everything needs to necessarily, you know, you can't just complain, but, you know, helping people feel like there is something that they can do with that. And not, and even if that's just saying, you know, I know they're trying to gaslight you, but like, that's real. What you experience is real. Like that in and of itself is really important. But wanting folks to feel like they don't have to just, you know, take, like they don't have to just sit in toxic situations without feeling like they have some levers that they can pull. So much of this program is about agency, and it's not just what's happening to you, but how you can like figure out, well, what's the piece that I want to change? What's the way that I can adapt how I'm thinking or leading in this scenario to not just have all of this toxicity coming to me? In some cases, that's moving into a new call. In some cases, that's setting some new boundaries. You know, there's lots of different ways that that can look, but helping people feel like they can embrace their agency, because
and
that still happens.
And that's such an important change, because just venting, I mean, when you just get to vent, it feels good temporarily, but it really hasn't moved you on in any way, right? You don't know what changes to make. You know, you might feel affirmed by the folks that were there, but then you go back into the toxic situation. And it's one thing for, you know, your little cohort to say, you just need to get out of there. But another to say, how do I make that happen, you know, in a healthy and impactful way?
Right? I mean, I got that.
I know. They were beating you up about
that's
that.
Been one of the things I've seen as the biggest markers of success of this program and demonstration that the method and the model actually works, because we see so much transition through this program from the time people start with us to when they finish. And that's very often, sometimes it's people leaving toxic situations and knowing it's not them, but that they need to find a better situation for their own leadership and personal and professional flourishing and growth. Sometimes it's people taking on, having the confidence to take on bigger roles or responsibilities, or deciding that they're going to stay where they are, but figuring out ways to flourish in the midst of that. So that's actually been really exciting to see that I've witnessed a lot of people who've come to the program in really challenging situations and don't stay there. And I think that is part of the power of not only the curriculum, but the cohort and the coaching, and really being in an environment where you can be affirmed in the strengths and the gifts of your leadership, and put yourself in an environment where those gifts are going to be able to flourish.
Yeah,
the coaching aspect of it is really crucial to that, because the coaches, I mean, I had Lois was my coach and she was brilliant, and she would let us kind of, we had our check-in time where we could all kind of say what was going on. I've apologized to my cohort a million times because I normally started crying or taking up too much time in our check-ins, but they were all so great. But, you know, she would let us kind of sit in the muck and vent a little bit, but she was the first one to say, okay, well, what are we going to do about it? Like, what are we, like, anybody have advice for Elise? Like, anybody have something that's worked for them? Or like, Elise, what are you doing to kind of do this or that? And so it's a really phenomenal space to, yes, to be able to vent. I mean, I was able to talk to other ELCA pastors who went through a similar situation that I did. I was able to talk to other Presbyterian and Baptist and other pastors too that kind of dealt with that. And that I think is a real strength of the program as well, is that it's not pigeonholed into one denomination. Because I mean, I think especially of our colleagues in the Baptist church, especially if they're in the Southern Baptist Convention, that they really are kind of one out of 50 in a lot of their situations. I mean, I see the ELCA increasing in how many women are becoming clergy and lead pastors, even though I had to laugh, Mom, because as you're like, I was the first woman pastor at every place I've been. I'm like, me too. And I got ordained in 2019. And I was the first woman lead pastor at Trinity and the first woman solo pastor at St. John. It's just crazy that's still the case.
Yeah, it continues.
Yeah, it does. But, you know, having so many denominations have access to this program has brought in really incredible perspectives, and learning about other systems too, and other polity and things like that. I mean, and then with it, you get, you know, more voices of color, queer voices. I mean, it's really, really kind of an incredible space to hear these other stories and experiences and then actively apply them to the, like, you know, hardcore logistical work that we're learning too. It's, I mean, I'm a fan.
Yeah, that's great. Could I just shift a little bit? You know, because this program is clearly for people who have gone to seminary. And as we all acknowledge, seminary doesn't do everything for you, right? It's a little launching pad, and it gives you a little bit of a foundation, but there's so much more to know and to learn. And, you know, seminaries, as far as I can tell, not just Lutheran ones, but most of them have, or at least have had in the past, I don't know about 21st century, because this is where I think so much is shifting in theological education and in preparing pastors and deacons and so forth for ministry. You know, there was just such a cookie cutter program that everybody had to go to. And boy, oh boy, did you have to prove yourself if you said, it just won't work for my family to do internship as a third year. Can I do it as a fourth year? So much pushback, you know, at that time. And it's just like, nope, because we've got it set up this way and this is how it works and et cetera. And now what I see is a number of seminaries really, really changing up their programs for a variety of reasons, trying to have as many different tracks as possible for people, and especially now post-COVID, when we did learn that you could develop relationships and learn online and not go to hell in a handbasket. Although there's still people that aren't sure about that. And so there are people in my generation for sure, but I'm also encountering, pastors in their 40s who are very concerned about what are these seminaries doing and what do you mean we're not teaching worship and preaching anymore? Where are you supposed to learn that? And I freak out about that too. So could you address sort of the changes that you see in seminaries and kind of where you think we are and kind of what you see as the benefits moving forward?
I'm going to start off and Chais, but I think, first of all, it's such an interesting time in theological education. What a great time to be alive as we think about all of the changes in the church, in society, in higher education broadly, and theological education sits right at the vortex of all of these really significant changes. And so I don't, there's probably never been one right cookie cutter solution, but there certainly won't be one cookie cutter solution moving forward. And so I think there are a lot of shifts in the broader ecology of theological education, and this program being one of them. Iron sharpening iron isn't the be all and end all, but part of why it was designed the way it is to address some things that aren't part of the central part of the theological curriculum for a Master of Divinity students. So when we talk about things like strategic planning, design thinking, change management, navigating conflict, team development, volunteer management, these are things that are essential for leadership in the nonprofit space and the church. Often aren't a central part of the seminary curriculum, which deals with really important things like history of Christian tradition and biblical studies. I'm a great fan of Hebrew, so I think it's important for people to read and translate. But I think we're going to be entering an era where flexibility is so much more important, thinking about who theological education is for and making it much more accessible to more people, thinking about broadening who are students to engage theological education, and not only those who are ordained in leadership in the church, but those who are leading in a variety of lay capacities, and people of faith who are operating in a variety of different professional spheres and want to bring questions about their faith to the work that they are doing day to day. One of the really fascinating things that we see is Tate does an amazing job of identifying our instructors and presenters for Iron Sharpening Iron, and seeks out the best people in the industry, whoever it is that we're trying to source from. And so often when she contacts, cold calls people, they will say to her, how did you know I was a Christian?
Oh my gosh.
And Thais has a spidey sense about these things, but often like she doesn't, right? But it just speaks to this notion that the questions about faith, about meaning, about purpose are so resonant in so many different parts of life. And I think the real task for the church and for institutions of theological education is to think about how might our doors be open more broadly, and what we do be made more accessible to engage more people in this conversation about questions of meaning and purpose and the resonance of the Christian faith and tradition.
Was the early focus groups part of, like, because I always wonder, because we have the setup of, we go 3 times or for these intensives and then do the work online and via Zoom and seminars in between, kind of how the process of choosing topics and speakers has come about. Because I know most days that I've been sitting in that conference room at Erdman, I've said, I wish we learned this in seminary. Like, I wish we had focused on this. I kid you not. And I love my seminary. But our education on church finances was one day, one day where our professor of New Testament tried desperately to teach us how to read a profits and loss sheet, and it did not go well. And so, like, our week of finance training was, financial education. I've gotten both professionally and personally. I mean, I'm sitting there texting my husband, like, have we really looked at our own financial plan? Like, we need to kind of get our stuff together here, buddy. But was that something you heard from kind of the early, you know, focus groups or participants of like, here are the topics that I wish we had gotten in seminary? And did that kind of, was that the foundation of how you built the program?
Part of it, and part of what we did was also looked at executive education programs in a variety of different fields, and so wanted pastors to have access to the curriculum that so many different professions use in thinking about shaping executive leaders. Oftentimes those programs are so prohibitively expensive that pastors just don't have access to that information.
Yeah.
And so part of the goal was really about bringing the excellence of that kind of curriculum to pastors. We have a lot of conversation with people in a variety of different professional fields and thinking about putting that curriculum together. And one conversation with a business school professor, and I was talking with him about what we were doing, and said, you know, we understand very clearly that being the pastor is not the same as being CEO of a Fortune 500 company.
Mm-hmm.
These are different things. And right away he said, right, but it's not less than that.
Mm.
And that always just really caught me of the task of pastoral leadership is so precious, so complex, and requires skill, ability to run a small, medium-sized, even a large nonprofit organization, and also to work with volunteers and attend to them pastorally. And the combination of those things together is enormously complex task of leadership. And so I'm thinking about putting together the curriculum. That's why the excellence of it is so important, because the task of pastoral leadership is complex. It demands our best. And also very often, I think for pastors, sort of one thing to talk about this in seminary when it's maybe a theoretical conversation, but for pastors who have been out for a couple of years and are working in context, they then bring their own sense of experience to the conversation that also is a really important part of the dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah, it was amazing, kind of the mix of those of us who were kind of like the you know, four to 8 years in, but then there were also women who had been serving for 20, 30 years, and they were still like, to see what we both got out of it, or kind of how we could, you know, get the advice of folks who'd been in it longer, and kind of, how are you going to apply this? Cause you've been doing this successfully for 20 years. Like, how is this affecting your outlook? Or, you know, when you were in your first call, what would you have done differently? So, you know, it's kind of cool to be able to do that for sure.
I think one of the things that has been so interesting, and, you know, and it is true, roughly 90% of the speakers that we reach out to are like, how did you know? And it's like, not in your bio, just talk it up to the Holy Spirit. But one of the things that I think has been so cool, and I think gets back to kind of the thinking of iron sharpening iron and what's actually happening in these learning spaces, is the way in which our participants, the women in Iron Sharpening Iron, have been such a gift to every speaker that has been in front of them, that it has helped them see their own work, their own scholarship differently, with new layers and new contexts. And that is beautiful. When we had a panel discussion with, they were women who were serving as presidents of different colleges and universities, talking about change management kind of post-COVID and kind of what that had looked like for them. One of them very, you know, bluntly said, she's like, I have been so excited to hear from all of you about how you've been navigating this. And I think this is the thing with pastors that is so important, is you're not like a pastor leader with like an asterisk. Like, you are a full leader, no asterisk required. And as much as you might have to gain in these interdisciplinary conversations, you have so much to give in these interdisciplinary conversations. And so it radically changes your own posture as a learner when you know that, like, you're not just there, and, you know, I say this in every interview, you're not just there to unzip your brain and let somebody tell you this is how churches should be doing things. Like, you are there to be an active interlocutor with the person at the front of the room, that your expertise matters just as much, because the application of whatever they're saying you are doing it. And so like your questions, your thoughts, the consideration you bring to it is so deeply, deeply important. And I think that is the, like, the essence of this is like remembering, you know, and Elise, you probably remember this from the interview too, is like, our job is not to make you a leader. You are already leading.
Yeah.
Like our job is to give you like some tools, some language to like understand like how you want to talk about the kind of leader that you are, how you want to advocate for what you need to be a successful leader. And the thing that is so amazing is that in saying yes to this thing, to resource yourself, you end up giving so much to all of these other people who are related to the program as speakers, as other participants, like even with like our coaches and pastors and residents, everybody is blessing each other like left and right. And it is this remarkable thing that when, you know, we are a big fan of saying like that one way of thinking about the impact of this program is if at the end, you know, whatever kind of context you're in, if your local mayor called you and said, I'm putting together a task force and I want it to be you, Pastor so-and-so, with the head of the local chamber of commerce and the executive director of the biggest nonprofit in town and a member of my administration, that you would understand not just like how to contribute to that conversation, the unique perspective that you bring to that conversation. Your job is not to show up with your collar, say the opening prayer, and then bless whatever everybody else around the table decided to do.
Mm-hmm.
But that like you would understand the language, the terminology being used, that you would be able to be a positive influence and contributor and collaborator in that conversation. And that, oh, by the way, you would have enough capacity in your work life to be able to say yes to an invitation like that and understand why it is so valuable for you to be able to do that. Yeah. Like these are the things that no matter whether you've been in your call for 20 years, 2 years, whatever it might be, the ability to say yes to the things that allow you to show up as your full self, to give of like all the different gifts and perspectives you bring, and to be able to contribute effectively. Like these are things that everybody should be able to do. But so often, like we put ourselves in smaller boxes. Mm-hmm. And this is about like opening up and being like, you can and should be in a bigger box.
Yeah.
And the speakers, I think, really get that. And it's part of how we prepare them. And I think they have been so surprised by how much they take away from it. And that is like the thing that we want everybody to know. It's not just what you're getting out of it, but like you are giving to these people at the front of the room as much as you're receiving anything.
Yeah.
Well, that's a really interesting point too, because it reflects my career experience, which was that it felt like in the 1950s and 60s, pastors did see themselves as people of power, especially if you were sort of in a larger congregation or whatever. Folks went to you for advice. You might even have the ear of the governor if your church was big enough. And but then by the time I was coming along in the 80s, it was like clergy felt like they had no impact on society, that nobody was interested in talking to them. And I do a lot of work with the homeless and racial reconciliation and all that stuff in our community. And I just saw that that wasn't true. You know, it was like, you know, the mayor of Columbia would say, what are the clergy doing? We need them to help us. Mm-hmm. You know, we need their moral voice, you know, and their ability. And they saw this, and I think we did. And they're like, if we need something in this city and you go tell your congregation, you know, bring paper towels for X on Sunday, you know, you have the power to make all those people do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll do it, you know, for you because you did a call out to them, et cetera. And that's where I started learning that, you know, we are still an anchor institution in communities, even though we feel like maybe we're not. I mean, I know it looks differently, but sort of realizing your power and your leadership, I think, is really, really important. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that you said that I just loved was something that I've thought a lot about, what I call it cross training. And I did it first when I was in a Doctor of Ministry program at LSTC, the Lutheran School of Theology in Chicago. And we had to put little teams together. The pattern of the program, the 3-year program, sounds very similar to how you've laid out the learning, you know, in group settings and then the stuff at home, and except it was 3 years instead of one. And so my area was preaching. That's what I was getting the DMin in. And I decided to invite, along with some people in my congregation, which is what we're supposed to do, I decided to invite my friend Gail to be a part of this. And I'll say hi to Ari, her husband. He listens to all our podcasts.
He's a big listener. Hey, Ari.
And I just felt like Gail had some perspectives and some gifts that I could use. At that point, which was kind of the late 1990s, she was a stand-up comedian in Chicago. She had was really developing her own business, if you will, to train mostly at that time police officers and military about date rape and sexual abuse and all of this. And they did it with comedy, you know, in the beginning, for sure.
She now works for the Department of Defense. So
yes, she is.
Yeah.
Doing the same thing.
She's a big girl now.
So she travels all over the world doing that, and she's Jewish, and so her perspective was so wonderful. And now when we get together every Christmas for sure, but other times as well. And when our two families sit down, they always want to talk theology, what's happening in church, what's happening in the world, and it's so refreshing, because I get perspectives that, you know, I just don't see otherwise. And I think about how important that is. You know, what does a teacher in high school understand about teaching difficult subjects? Mm. You know,
right,
that the rest of us could benefit from. And it just sounds like the type of thing that you're doing in the IRON program. And I really appreciate it. I said, I know it's not the iron.
It's not a multivitamin, Mom.
Does it come in a bottle?
For God's sake, get the lingo right.
One thing that I will add to that I think has been so cool. So this spring, we launched our first virtual cohort for the 10-week leadership development seminar. And that cohort is open to people who are not ordained, who are not working in congregational settings. So of that cohort of 11, only 4 of the 11 are pastors working in congregations. Other people are coming from education, nonprofit. One person's working in the government sector. One of the things that I think has been so cool is that for a number of the women in that program, they're lay leaders in their congregations, and their churches are helping fund them getting this type of resourcing and learning. Mm-hmm. And the thing that has been so interesting is to see some of what has been happening on the speaker participant side now happening actually among like a cohort, which has been very cool. But also this idea that, like, you know, within each of our congregations, if you are in a congregation-based setting, is you actually have so many gifted leaders that, like, just need that, like, little bit of additional investment in kind of, like, how they bring their skills to bear. And I think about your friend Gail, and I think about, you know, how you take something like comedy and put it with something like teaching, in many cases, like men about like sexual assault. And it's like, ooh, is that how we want to talk about that? It's like, but is that an effective way to talk about it? Is it able to communicate something to them that they might not be able to hear otherwise? Mm-hmm. And like, I would argue if she's working for the Department of Defense, something's going right. she must be effective.
Yeah.
That's this thing around how, like, again, we put so many lines and restrictions around how expertise can show up. And I think there's a way in which, like, the problems within congregations, communities, the country, the world are so big that we need to, like, have an interdisciplinary approach to how we think about these things. The church has a role to play when we're talking about these big things. So how are pastors showing up? But also, how are pastors thinking about who they have within their congregations to help them, like, address some of these really big things? So I think it's this, there's a very lovely flattening of, like, how and when expertise gets activated that I think is really beautiful. And I think is meeting the moment where our challenges are so interdisciplinary, they're so intersecting with all these different things, it calls for an interdisciplinary way of addressing them. And I think, you know, again, iron sharpening iron isn't here to like fix all the things, but I think it's a way of saying like this model like can work.
Yeah.
And it can really bring something that is beautiful and effective. And when you can do both, do both.
Yeah. And I love a lot of the opportunities that I'm seeing kind of via email for us to plug in our congregational leadership. Like I've forwarded a couple of those things to my council president. Like we need to do this. We need to do it as a group. Because it was so funny. When I told everybody that I was going to be gone for a week in May, when I like had just started, I kind of tried to like quickly explain the program, you know, during announcement time at church. And I said, I'm going up to Princeton, and it's this executive leadership certificate through the seminary and all this kind of stuff. And I came back and they said, we didn't know we had an Ivy League pastor, you know, this guy. It was so funny, like what they heard and kind of like,
well, then they're proud of you.
They were very proud of me. It was very sweet. And so it's like, you know, being able to then bring that and say, hey, like, you know, because like you said, Mom, you know, earlier on in this conversation, our congregations aren't always very interested in our continuing ed if we don't immediately come back and say, here's what I learned and here's how we can implement this. And so like to be able to kind of slowly implement a lot of what I'm learning, you know, I have the stack of books I've gotten from ISI, and, you know, we'll kind of like pull articles out and chapters out and say, hey, you know, I know we're freaking out about finances. Let's look at this, or, you know, and so to be able to kind of have that pool of resources to then put in front of our people. So it's not just this like insular, you know, experience where I grew as a person and a pastor, but then to actually be able to have all of these channels to bring people in. I mean, even in just the year and a half that I've known of ISI, I've seen how you all have developed new programs and all these different things, and taken it from just like, yeah, we have this executive leadership program, to now there's online cohorts, there's lay leader opportunities, there's, you know, one-off seminars and things like that. And, you know, so is there anything you guys can share about kind of the future of ISI and how long you want to see this thing go, and how alumni can stay involved and different opportunities that might be coming down the pipeline for lay leaders as well?
Oh my gosh, Elise, you only have to ask. Well, so this is a really wonderful season where we are trying a lot of different things, and there are a lot of different opportunities. So the two things that I would say kind of first and foremost are the applications are open for class 6 of the in-person 12-month executive leadership certificate program. The application is also open for the next virtual cohort for the leadership development seminar. And again, that's open to women across a range of professions, the virtual one is. And that, you know, the 10 weeks aren't necessarily 10 weeks in a row, but similar to the kind of foundational program, there's a coach that walks with you through all 10 weeks. There's a pastor in residence who walks with you through all 10 weeks. And it really is a phenomenal program. And especially for people who can't, you know, pick up and come to Princeton 3 times a year, they're caring for littles, they're caring for parents. Their congregation, you know, is small enough that they don't have a continuing education budget to fund them coming out to Princeton. It's really built with busy women in mind and built to be as accessible as possible. So those, I would just name, the applications are open for both of those. In terms of things that we have coming up for lay leaders, some that I'm really excited about, we are partnering with an organization called Culturally, Dr. Lauren Martin. We are doing a two-part workshop online in August, around how we're thinking about kind of the most recent 2024 data around best practices in diversity, equity, inclusion, and how churches should be thinking about that. How you're incorporating that into how you partner with different community organizations, how you think about your own staffing. So day one is kind of just a catch up on the scholarship, and day two is more of a workshop to kind of bring some things that you're thinking about. And Dr. Martin's going to kind of get in there with you on those things. Another one that is going to be really phenomenal, we're doing a 2-day workshop on the future of church property, evolving with integrity. And so this is going to have both in-person and online components. So we're working with Dr. Lindsay Baker, who's the CEO of something called the International Future Living Institute. She's our plenary speaker both days. And all of her work is really around how buildings are a testament to values. And how we think about our built environment really matters. And so day one is going to be thinking about your own congregation's readiness for change. And then day two is going to be more around kind of what actions you can take in aligning people for that change. But the cool part is in the afternoons, we're going to have a mix of different workshops that people can select into based on things that feel the most kind of tangible in terms of next steps for their own setting and context. So we'll be talking about buildings and deferred maintenance. We'll be talking about how in the Inflation Reduction Act, there are actually some different ways, things you can take advantage of to help pay for some of these changes that you might want to make and, you know, becoming a more sustainable building and things like that. We have a pastor who's going to be coming in to talk about social enterprise and how that changes the way you might think about your building. We're also going to have someone who's talking about kind of capital campaigns and how you fundraise to do all these lovely things. So there'll be a mix of workshops for that. And then the third would be, we are so excited that we're going to be doing kind of a mix of synchronous and asynchronous for this new, call it a short course, call it a module, but it's Women, Power, and Violence, Sacred Texts, and Modern Conversations. So specifically how we kind of take the way we read certain really hard texts in the Old Testament, but we don't throw out the whole Bible. We find ways to work through those things and how we bring a similar hermeneutic to some very contemporary questions around women and power and sexual assault and trauma. And so we are very excited that we have an Old Testament scholar, Ashley Elser, who's going to be doing kind of the scriptural pieces. And then we'll have some recorded conversations with women who are experts in post-traumatic care, in kind of reconciliation and resilience within congregations, and workplace harassment. And so it's a way that we don't just talk about these things, but as leaders think about how we want to be shaping our congregations to continue to have this conversation and care for people really well. And so these are all places where we want our leaders, we want ISI alumna to be deeply involved in any and all of these things. But also, if we resource you really well and you go back to your congregation and people are like, what are you talking about? We're trying to create all of these offerings where there are very clear ways in for lay leaders, mm-hmm. so that way you're not just resourcing yourself, but you're able to kind of resource the team, the group that's going to yeah. help you actually implement and take action on some of these things. But yeah, so those are three of the big ones that are coming up. But, you know, we're also always open to ideas. So if there yeah. are things that you're interested in, say the word. And it
all right.
probably happen.
And for those workshops, just to clarify for our dozens of listeners.
Yes.
Around the world. The workshops are accessible to all folks, men, women, yes. leaders, all of that. Cool. Yeah.
Oh, that's a really helpful thing. So anything that's cohort based, so the in-person executive leadership program and the leadership development seminar, anything that's with the cohort is women only.
Yeah.
Anything that is like topical and like resource based is intended mm-hmm. to be co-ed so that you can come with yeah. members of your staff, members of your lay leadership, because those are going to be co-ed conversations. But yeah. for now, the cohorts, women only.
Love it. And I love too that we're giving the male leadership of our congregations or our male colleagues an opportunity to be a part of a continuing ed where women are leading it, like women experts. I think we have to see that and have to bring bring our folks to those tables. So it's like, you know, it's not just, you know, me, Sally Feminist, standing up in the pulpit every week. Like, there are all these other women doing this too. I'm not just some like crazy outlier, you know, so that's really awesome. But yeah, and I hope if Ari is listening to this episode, I'm gonna send
Ari, you can jump on board, buddy.
Yeah, you can jump on board. And I'm gonna send you a link for the sexual violence one for Gail. She would probably be a great resource for y'all. If you would
she
like
would
her
be a
email
great
address, we
resource.
could send that to you.
Yeah, send me Gail's email address. I love it.
And
this.
She has her PhD in this too.
She does. I mean, I honestly, like a lot of the times when I've been sitting there during the cohorts, I'm like, how can I get my Aunt Gail plugged in with these folks? Like, where could she fit? Because she is such a kick-ass speaker. She's funny. And she just knows her stuff. And she's like, she's the kind of woman that like would just be phenomenally like accepted and I think really adored by the group. So
I love it.
Awesome. Yeah, I even talked to her about it too. I was like, so I'm doing this thing and I think you should be a speaker at it, but I don't know where you would fit. But Thais and Anne are really good at figuring out where people will fit. So I'm just going to make the connection and then walk away.
I've had Gail as a Zoom guest speaker at preaching workshops and preaching class in seminary.
Yeah. She's been a big
Although I got to say, a lot of the students were like, what? What is this about? You know.
They weren't ready.
That's
Mom.
Their loss.
They weren't ready.
They don't always get, but you know, we're not the only field that does this. There is in my hometown here of Columbia, South Carolina, large hospital system here has just opened a kind of a specialty in family practice. And, you know, which they realize is like a dying breed, right? Because everybody wants to be a specialist of some kind and have the super big office and all this jazz. And so I thought, you know, one of the benefits of being a family practice physician is that you keep patients for decades. And just like pastors do, right? You see them on a regular basis. They're not just in for the surgery and then you say, you're done now, bye. And so I volunteered to several different people. I said, you know, because they only are going to have like 13 residents at a time. And I said, you know, I'd be willing to come in and just do a little seminar on some techniques for developing long-term relationships
Look
from my perspective.
Look at you.
They never called me. But, you know, I think that's, you know, that's another field out there that, you know, talk about cookie cutter.
Oh, my God. Right? I was very curious about what you were going to do with that story, Mom. I'm like, where's she going with this? What's happening? And then it ended in, and they rejected me. But that's fine. I think for now. They'll come back.
Maybe
around.
I just need to write it up as a better proposal.
No, I think you've got plenty on your plate. Thank you. So don't worry about it. Oh, my gosh. Well, Anne and Thais, thank you so much for
we
being here.
We loved it.
We absolutely loved it. You two are phenomenal humans. And keep doing what you're doing. I mean, my goodness. It's just... it's changing lives, truly. So thank you both so, so
thank
much.
Thank you so much for all of it.
Yeah. Thank you for your time. You'll be compensated in stickers.
Maybe. That's if we can get some more made.
Yeah, well, super grateful for both of you for the chance to talk about it. I'm going to say isi.ptsem.edu. Go to it.
Yes.
But really, I think like part of the gift of like this podcast and the invitation to even be here with y'all is like this is what it is. It's like having the conversation, realizing that like it resonates, and just really grateful for the chance to talk about it. And that, you know, Elise, your participation in the program gave so much. And
thank you.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. I appreciate it.
So nice to get to know you all. I really appreciate your time with us.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those of you who didn't catch the website, we will put it in our show notes. So you will have all the access. You're on mute and ISI are good friends now. So we're going to make sure you have all that information coming your way. Well, thank you both so much again for your time. And have a great day.
We'll see you. Thanks so much. Thank you. Enjoy the summer.
Yep. Have fun.
Bye, friends.
Bye. Are they not just the coolest?
They are.
Oh, my goodness. I love them both so much.
I know. That's great.
Yeah. And they're both so different from each other. Their leadership styles are so
different.
Yeah,
they are.
You know, but they just really, they're a dynamic duo for sure. I mean, they just like, it's pretty incredible. So it's pretty awesome.
It was definitely good to hear a lot more about it, and it's just very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think, what do you think women of your generation would think about that program? And it's, you know, would they think?
I think they would wish they'd had it.
Do you wish you'd had it?
Yeah. I mean, I think that they'll say, man, I wish I could have been a part of something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It's really special. And it's cool too. Within the cohort, there are women, whether they were like second career pastors or they mm-hmm. have been doing it for 20, 25 years, you know, that come into the program. And it's really incredible to see like what they give and also how much they learn and take away from it. You know, I mean, there's like, God, they, you know, you'll hear sometimes like, well, I've been doing it this certain way for 20 something years, but.
Well, it's just like everybody benefits.
Oh gosh. Absolutely.
You know, if you're open to it, it's great.
But I do like, there were definitely times at like the height of the Trinity trauma.
I know
where I was there and would just like, you know, try not to insert my questions too much, but like especially during the finance week, which was definitely, I mean, hindsight, but also in the moment, knowing that was at towards the end of my time mm-hmm. at Trinity, you know, and the church finances can be such a battleground, and it certainly was for me mm-hmm. at Trinity. And so like I just left every week feeling like I could really tackle whatever.
Well, and I was thinking during that conversation that one of the things that would be helpful in something like that is I think that, you know, so often, and, you know, I've had this conversation with you before about church treasurers. Mm-hmm. And because the people that either are willing to do that volunteer job or are sought out are people who usually often are business people mm-hmm. Or CPAs. Or even bookkeepers, right? Something mm-hmm. like that. And we're like, okay, you understand figures. You understand money.
Yeah.
And, but I think that can be a strained relationship sometimes because finance people, business people come at numbers in a different way. And I think mm-hmm. we need to understand each other. You know, I've told stories about how church treasurers always want to give you the stats on why, you know, if we keep receiving this much in offering and keep having these expenses, we will be dead in 5 years.
Right, yeah.
Or like here at Pilgrim, we'll be dead in a year, so it does kind of up it. But
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that, you know, one thing that I've learned over time is that I really don't understand how hardcore business people work.
Yeah.
And how they, you know, how they look at things. Like even my sister-in-law, who is a banker, I mean, she approaches the world in a very different way than I do. She mm-hmm. she sees different things,
yeah.
asks different questions.
Yeah.
And it's not that any of them are wrong. It's just a different worldview.
Yeah, it's just different.
And I think it would be helpful if in a program like Iron Sharpening Iron could, you know, focus on that. That would be one of my recommendations to them.
Oh, they do. I mean, that's all the finance week.
That's all the finance stuff.
Yeah.
But is it specifically also helping to understand, here's how business people think?
Yeah, because all the presenters.
Because you also have those folks on your church council and stuff,
oh, yeah.
too.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that there's like specific, like, okay, here's how the two worlds can play nice. Mm-hmm. But all of the presenters and all of and the plenary speakers and the workshop breakout, whatever people, they are business people. And so they are teaching us the view of numbers and finances from their perspective.
Right, right.
And so mm-hmm. so you do kind of get this like peek behind the curtain of like, oh, okay, so like when I see this line on a P&L sheet, I breathe a sigh of relief, but my treasurer is freaking out. And so why
they seldom breathe the sigh of relief.
Breathe the sigh of relief, exactly. And so, you know, but what was really interesting, like the professor from Rutgers, who was a very impressive person, you know, she she was very involved with her synagogue's finance. I think, you know, it was really funny kind of hearing from the Jewish perspective. She was like, yep, when my rabbi found out I was a, you know, finance economics professor, I got immediately asked to be the synagogue treasurer, you know, kind of thing. It was really kind of funny. But so she did kind of have that knowledge of like a faith-based, faith world.
That was nice
perspective. So that was cool. But she also, I mean, I remember I took her, we were told to bring like our church's last, you know, profit and loss sheet and a copy of our budget. And so I brought her ours and the P&L sheet at Trinity, which even little old me with very little financial savvy knew that it was too long. I was like, why in the world do we have
too much detail?
Why do we have so many line items and accounts and all these different things? Like, it just seemed a little sketchy to me. And so I went up to her and I said, I just need you to glance at this and tell me if it's too long or too short or what, like, kind of what the deal is. She looked at that for 0.2 seconds and she said, it shouldn't even have a staple. She was like, this is insane. Like, she was like, why is your P&L 8 pages long? I was like, girl, from your lips to God's ears. Like, I don't know either. But so even like small moments like that within the program where you just get that little bit of validation, like, okay, I do know more than I'm giving myself credit for. Like, those kind of spaces are so rare, I think, for a lot of people in general, but specifically for women or anyone who has been kind of ostracized by the community, whether it's LGBTQ leaders, leaders of color, you know, whatever, when you're told that your personhood is not valid, what makes you think your leadership is going to be valid?
Right. It's
and
not.
So to be in those spaces, and I talked to Thais, I think Thais, maybe Anne too, but I kind of asked both of them, I said, when you were planning this program, what kind of thought went into like trans women leaders or non-binary leaders? And because, you know, when I first started going as a cisgender woman, I was perfectly comfortable with the sisterhood language and the women only space and this and that. And there were, you know, a handful of queer women there. And so, you know, cis women, but queer women. And, you know, but it was so interesting because, I mean, and I should have expected this, they had thought about it so carefully and so compassionately. And they said, we hope that this program is a blueprint to create spaces for those other leaders in spaces that they need. But we wanted to focus on, you know, making a space for women leadership right now. And I just thought that that was so kind of them. And right. even just the fact that they could say, yes, in development, that was a huge consideration. I think it shows a lot of forethought and, you know, inclusive thinking that you just don't see in a lot of these spaces. It wasn't an afterthought. It was a pre-thought and something that they took very seriously and considered. And so I appreciate that about this program, especially like everything is intentional, even down to.
Well, that's because they're just really smart people.
They're so smart.
And intuitive.
Almost intimidatingly so. Like they're incredibly nice and kind people, as we all just heard. But I mean, I even made sure I kept my blouse on from when I was in the office today because I was like, I gotta look good for Anne and Thais.
I noticed that.
I was like, yeah, I know. I was like, oh man, we can't record in our hats and t-shirts this time.
It wasn't a hats and t-shirts day.
We had to step.
Well, not when we have guests.
Right. I know. But yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know, they, I just always love it when really, really intelligent really intelligent, impressive people are also very approachable. And I feel like,
Sweet spot for sure.
That's a sweet spot. Those two are definitely, you know, the definition of that. And so it was just so great that they made some time for us and and had such a good conversation. And I really hope, like, if you are a clergywoman, ordained, you know, in ELCA speak, you know, deacon, word in service, word in sacrament, check this program out. Like, even if you feel like your shit don't stink, which I hope you do. I hope we all are walking around with that confidence. This program will offer you something. And no matter where you are in your career too, it's just,
They ought to advertise at the, or do have a table or something at the ELCA assembly.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely, see if they want to do that. I mean, they're expanding. Like, it used to just be like Ann and Thais, and then they had like a student helper. Shout out to Hannah. She was awesome. She was at my first 2 weeks. She always made sure I was supplied with Ghirardelli chocolates and Dove chocolates. So like she was the bomb.com. But now they have, you know, they have a assistant program director who does, or program coordinator, excuse me, who does like all of the, social media and a lot of the marketing and things like that. And then kind of the day-to-day logistical work of the in-person cohort meetings. And, she's phenomenal. Like, we got to know her at the last in-person, and she has an MDiv from Howard. She's got a master's degree from Rutgers. I mean, this woman is like, I'm so mad I'm blanking on her name. I think her name is Nicole. I'm terrible with names. I mean, they just like, and I, you know, Thais and I talked about this in May when I was there, this incredible gift they have, of figuring out who will work well together. Like, we all were so amazed in how well our cohorts got along, both like in the greater class. Like, I'm part of cohort 4, but then our coaching groups were kind of our small groups. And within my coaching group, we could not have been more different people. Like, you know, if you were to line us up on a train platform, you wouldn't think any of us knew each other. Like, it was just crazy. But the bond we now share is so incredible. And the similarities we were able to find and the way we communicated with each other. And so I was like talking to Thais about that and how grateful I was for it. And she had this kind of like knowing smile on her face. And I was like, you put us together on purpose, didn't you? She goes, of course I did. She was like, of course I knew you were going to get along with so-and-so. And I was just like, after a 20-minute Zoom conversation, and she's like, it's a spiritual gift. I don't know. I don't know what I did to earn it, but it's just like, it's something I've always been good at. And so it really shows in how they put things together, and even how like the different classes will interact. Like, she was telling us in class 4 how excited she was for us to meet class 5, because she knew that we would really click. And hot dang if she wasn't right. We had just, I mean, we loved class 3 when we were with them, but class 5, I mean, we just really, really bonded with them in a really special way. And so, I can't speak more highly of the program and the folks who are running it. It's just a really,
that's so great,
really beautiful thing. Outside of you and Dad, certainly the biggest influence on my ministry.
I know, I can tell.
So
it's good to have things like that, more so in some ways than seminary.
Oh gosh, yeah. I mean, it was interesting when we were talking about seminary in the conversation. You know, I think my class in seminary, and probably those of us who were in seminary in kind of the 2 years before me, 2 years after me, we're kind of a bridge generation between like old curriculums and new curriculums. Like, you know, I was the second year at LSTC doing what they called the public church curriculum.
Oh, I know.
Which had its pros and cons. But, you know, we were one of the first groups that didn't have to take ancient languages. I didn't take Greek or Hebrew because languages scare me. But luckily, I had professors like Dr. Barbara Rossing, who, while she was devastated we weren't taking Greek, she taught us how to use,
dictionary or...
Yeah, she taught us how to use, like, you know, the different translations. Like, okay, if you don't know Greek, you know, look up King James, look up Common English, look up NRSV, look up this, and pay attention to the words that are different.
Different.
And then go to the, what is it, concordance? What is it called?
Well, like a concordance?
Yeah,
No.
concordance. Yeah, I thought I was using that word wrong. So go to the concordance and then look up that specific word and read about it. So she taught us how to do word studies without necessarily...
Without having the original language,
right,
necessarily.
Exactly. And, yeah, you know, we had Old Testament professors that did the same thing with the Hebrew for us. And so we did that, but our focus really was, how does the church engage with the world?
Right.
And since we were a very progressive seminary in Chicago, it was all about, like, you know, social justice and getting involved in, you know, movements and things like that, Moral Mondays and all of those kind of things. But when we focused on those things so hard, which I'm grateful for, we really did lose a lot of some of the logistical skills that would have been good, like, you know, financial management, or even my Bible education was a little bit lacking. I've had to do a lot of self-study, especially.
No, I remember you were concerned about that.
Yeah, especially in Old Testament. And so, you know, there are certain things gained and lost whenever you change curriculums like that, which makes...
Because you can't do everything, which is why I'm hoping that as theological education, you know, it's morphing again, that this kind of coaching, assumption of continuing ed, and all those kinds of things will in some ways, somehow, be a part of the curriculum. Like, this program assumes that you will do X, Y, and Z. And, you know, and that, you know, at least in our group, you know, synods will have certain responsibilities to make sure that there are first call theological education groups, you know, and maybe even the first 3 years out, certain things are required.
Yeah.
Because if they're not required, then you sometimes, if you're in a congregation where the council isn't that supportive of it, you're going to say, well, I just guess I won't do it. You
I
know?
Mean, that's true too. I mean, I, you know, I don't regret it for a minute, but I mean, when I was at Trinity, I had far more access to finances and could, I mean, ISI is like, I mean, the prices might change as inflation happens and whatever, but
well, I was going to say, what does it cost? I was going to ask him.
$200.
That's all?
That's it. I pay $200 for a full week of all your meals, your room and board, and all of the materials. They would give us stacks of books for free. Like,
well, they've got that program underwritten somehow.
Well, yeah. Well, they also, I mean, they were able to create it because of a Lilly grant. And so, and which are usually pretty, pretty significant. And so, but, you know, and there's, they have found other support as well, but they wanted to make it affordable for participants across the board. And so, I mean, for me at Trinity, a $200 continuing ed was nothing.
Right.
At St. John, that's a big chunk of my continuing ed budget, but it's still doable, you know,
right.
or I can split it with the church, which I think since I was so new.
Because even small churches will give like $500 a year or something.
Right. Exactly. Which I think is kind of what I get now. But I mean, for this one, for in May, which is my last session, I just paid it myself, you know, out of my own pocket, and was like, if I want to get reimbursed for it, I will. But yeah, so I mean, they, you know, they've just kind of really found the sweet spot and the secret sauce. And
is there anything kind of like it in other places? Did they mention that at all?
Not that I've seen or heard about. I'm sure outside of the church world, there are great executive leadership training programs. But
I think there's a lot of that these days.
There's a lot of that now, especially with so many people like going into business for themselves. But in terms of from the church, at least in the Lutheran world, I haven't heard of anything that's even along this line. And, you know, it is interesting, you know, we talked about how they include different denominations. It is very Presbyterian heavy because,
sure.
You know.
Because it's Princeton.
It's Princeton. And so most of the, like, first three cohorts were very Princeton alumna heavy.
Of course.
And then, you know, it's kind of funny how we were talking about there's usually, like, trees, right? So one of the things you can do is nominate someone to be considered. So like I nominated my friend yesterday, actually. I filled out a nomination form for her. And I try to nominate one or two people for each cohort that I think would like really benefit from it. And so it was really cool because I'm in cohort 4 and one of the women I nominated ended up in cohort 5 and she was a colleague of mine from Chattanooga. And so it was really cool because I got to know her on a whole different level when we were there together in May, which was awesome. And so there's kind of this joke now of it's like, you know, for a couple of classes, there was a big Episcopalian presence because of this one woman who was an Episcopalian priest. And she started nominating all these women from her denomination. And now like the Episcopalian presence has kind of faded. But now there's this big Lutheran presence because a bunch of us Lutherans came in and we've started telling everybody we know about it. And so there's some interesting cycles. But I mean, there are a lot of women from, you know, some evangelical denominations, Baptist denominations. And it's so fascinating hearing about how their systems work and where they feel like mm-hmm. they fit in them. So that's kind of a real gift of the program as well. And it's certainly one of the most racially diverse continuing eds
I've
been a part of. Yeah, it's just incredible. And our pastors in residence, I mean, you know, Thais named them, but they really make the worship all week. I mean, the worship is the first thing we do in the morning. I am not a morning person, and I am also not someone who seeks out new worshiping opportunities when I'm away from my congregation.
Right.
I refused to miss worship at these. Mm. They are just really, really special. And so, yeah, I mean, I could go on and on about how highly I think about it. So thanks everybody for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed that conversation with Thais Carter and Ann Stewart. Make sure you check out Iron Sharpens Iron, the program, a real kind of becoming a whole network of programs through Princeton Theological Seminary. We will post the link to ISI in the show notes for this episode. But if you're a Googler, you can also just Google ISI Princeton and it'll be the first thing to pop up if that's easier for you. And you know, while you're doing that, if you want to give us a like and subscribe wherever you're listening to your podcast, that would be great. And if you have any ideas of a topic we can talk about here on the show, shoot us an email at youronmutepod@gmail.com. That's youronmutepod@gmail.com. And we would love to hear from you. Got any closing words, Mom?
Don't accept just to thank all of our listeners, and I keep discovering who you are, mm-hmm. and it's often to my surprise, and so I just am so delighted by that, and Elise and I are very, very grateful for your partnership and for your listening, and we enjoy it, and we learn things,
yep.
and we hope that you do as well. So
absolutely.
Have a wonderful rest of the summer, everybody.
Yeah, enjoy, stay hydrated, and stay safe. We appreciate you. Bye.
Bye-bye.